It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight when Patty Vasquez takes over with Pretty Late Patty Vasquez. All right, you know what? I'll admit it. I'm coming out of the closet here. I didn't want to do this live on the radio, but I am a rosé drinker. Let it sink in. I drink rosé. I love the way it tastes. It's chilled. It's refreshing. As Erica Wozniak, who was on the show a little bit earlier, she called it summer water. I agree with that. Rosé, of course, is nothing new. It's growing in the States as more and more people are consuming the cousin of the white wine. Joining me in studio to talk about a life in wine, and I don't know why we haven't done this earlier, in the sense that I feel like we've pretty much talked about food and beer, but we have yet to talk about wine in this program. In studio, the Windy City wine guy, Michael Botteliero. He's a certified sommelier and wine consultant. You can find his work at windycitywineguy.com. Michael, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you.
I kind of joke, and I mentioned it earlier on the show. I was on a wine tasting in California, and I ordered the rosé flight, and I kind of got my masculinity questioned. Like, the guy was like, a pretty confident guy, huh? Going with the rosé. Don't let anyone see this in public. I was like, what? It's rosé. Everybody drinks rosé, right? So what? I mean, but it is true. Right now, rosé is kind of hot.
It's not even on the rise anymore. I mean, it has risen, so it's beyond that. It's really popular drink. Pink, everybody loves it. It's the chic thing to do. Beautiful people drinking beautiful wine and beautiful places.
That's me.
There we go. See, and I mean, over 300 million gallons are consumed per year of rosé, and I mean, you can find them from almost any country, any red grape varietal. It's just really tasty, and it pairs well with a lot of foods. Great summer drink. So,
like, I mean, when I say it's a cousin of white wine, should I say it more? Is it more accurate to say it's a cousin of the red wine?
No, I think you hit it on the head because it's chill, just like the whites. I think of it as like with your white wines, how you get more of the like tropical fruit flavors, maybe citrus fruit flavors. But I think it's the same beverage, but on the other end of the spectrum where you're getting more berry, cherry fruit flavors, but you're drinking something that's lighter, something that's lighter in color as well, and something that you can chill and drink easy on a patio.
Now, this wine is very popular in Europe. It has been. It's taken a while for rosé to take off in the States. It took a little bit longer for it, but the numbers that you're throwing out, they're staggering for a wine to be consumed at that level.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people in Europe have been drinking it for, I think one of the biggest things is I've been to Europe. I see guys drinking pink wine. They have no problem with their masculinity over there. And then you come back over here and people were like, oh, I'm more of a beer drinker myself. And, you know, but I think a lot of people have gotten over that stigma and they just don't care. They finally taste it and they said, this thing tastes good. It's so refreshing.
Where's it come from? So give me an idea of the grape, because I went into Binny's not too long ago because I was like, I got to get a bottle, right? And I was so flummoxed by the aisle that was just, as far as the eye could see, rosés from France, from Italy, from Austria, from Spain. There were so many different varietals, and I guess I'm ignorant. I was like, I thought it was just a French wine.
Right. So they make them everywhere. You can make rosé out of any grape that has a red skin. Basically, the white juice is pressed out in the skin contacts with that for just a few hours, just to get a little bit of pink into it. And, I mean, you hit it on the head. Almost any country, almost any red grape varietal, you're going to be able to get it to. And they're going to taste different, each one. I highly encourage everybody to try California, Argentina, Rosé of Malbec, rosés from just about any country in Europe. They're all going to be really tasty, but they're just going to be really different. One of my favorite places to get from, though, like you said, with France, I always tell everybody you can't go wrong getting something from Provence.
Okay. Now, I always see this, and again, I have no concept of wine. I need to get better at this, but I always see it as there's a Pinot Rosé. Right, and you just mentioned a Malbec rosé. What does that mean? That they're different varietals of rosé.
Basically, the grape varietal, it's just a type of grape. So it's a Malbec vine that grows Malbec grapes. Okay. It's a Pinot vine that grows Pinot grapes. So that's basically the difference between the two of them.
Okay.
Well,
so
all of them.
All of them, right. I was in a restaurant in Chicago not too long ago, and they had Greek rosé. I'd never seen that. I was like, wow. And it did taste different. And when I was done, I was like, that doesn't taste anything like the fruity stuff I get from the Jewel.
Yeah, depending on where it comes from. I mean, you can get a lot more minerality out of it. You can get a lot more floral qualities out of it. You might not get all of those fruit components that you're used to with maybe something from Argentina or something from the West Coast. It's going to be totally different. But
does it follow the same logic when it comes to price points? Do rosés, because I go into Whole Foods now, and Whole Foods has the whole, you know, the whole cooler is just rosé and anything from $12.99 to $25.99, whatever it is. But I mean, is there a price point? Does it follow the same as white wine and red wine? There could be $3.99 rosé and $15.99. What's a good price for a rosé?
I think you could be able to find rosés anywhere in that $10 to $15 price range. I think with a lot of, even your whites with your reds, but it's going to be the same thing where you have different wine producing regions like, let's say, Taval or maybe something out of the Languedoc in France, where they're going to be a little bit more prized rosés as opposed to something that you're going to be able to get larger quantities produced in California or even in South America. But those wines you can find in that 10 to 15 range, they're nice rosés.
312-981-7200 if you got a question about rosés or wine production. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'd love to talk about wine production here in Illinois or in the region, in the Midwest. You know, I didn't think about wine being a thing here when I was in California, as I mentioned. I learned so much just going through winery tours. The first time I ever did that. And just going through it, I automatically had curiosity to, well, what happens in the Midwest? I kept asking everybody. They said, I think Michigan's got good stuff. Like, but I want to know about what's being produced here and what it takes to produce great wine in the Midwest. Michael Botelliero is in studio. He's the Windy City Wine Guy. You can find him at windycitywineguy.com. He's a certified sommelier and wine consultant. We'll continue the conversation right after the break. Stay with us. That's appropriate for our conversation. Popping tops.
Yeah.
Perfect. It's like they planned it that way. In studio with me, Michael Botelliero. He is the Windy City Wine Guy. You can get him at windycitywineguy.com. You can also, he's a certified sommelier and wine consultant. We're talking about rosé, but let's transition. I was interested in, when I went on this wine tour, it was almost on a whim. And I realized that I've kind of been making fun of people for going on wine tours their whole life. I'm like, oh, Mr. Wine Tour, you know, and it's the first time I did it. And then it made me think about Chicago and the area. I mean, does Chicago produce wines of substance or this area, the Midwest region?
Yeah, so all the lower 48 states all make grapes for wine. In all 50 states, people make wine in those states as well. So in Illinois, lots of wineries. We actually have what's called an AVA, which is an American Viticultural Area, down in southern Illinois, called the Shawnee Hills AVA. They make a lot of wine there.
Is it good?
They make some decent stuff. They have 20 different wineries, or maybe a little bit more than that. It's definitely worth a trip down there. I still haven't gone. I'm looking forward to it. But and then even in the Chicagoland area, so you asked about that, They make wine grapes around here as well. And then there's a few worthwhile places to visit also. You can go to one of my favorites to go to is Linfrid. They're out in Roselle.
Okay.
They bring in a lot of grapes from California to make some wines, but they also use local fruit.
So that really is, when you talk about a vineyard, that means that they're making the grapes right there. But there are a lot of wine producers who will ship grapes from other places and be located in this area.
Exactly. So that's just a winery where they're making wine out of grapes from just about anywhere.
Okay.
But we make some decent stuff here. The trouble with Illinois is that we have the really rough winters. It's really cold, so you need these hardy grape vines that can withstand a winter.
Right.
And it also can put up with some summers that may not be so hot, or like we experience here, where it's 100 degrees for maybe a month and then forget about it. It's just gone. So... Really?
Well, what about, I always hear Michigan, like along the lake, vineyards or wineries, and that part of the area is.
Yeah, Michigan is a really great place for picking up some wine or even to do some wine tours. Southwest Michigan, really close by. You know, you just go right over the Indiana border. You step in there, and then there's some really nice wineries. Round Barn is a really good one. You've got Lemon Creek. And then if you feel like taking the trip further north, it's about a 5-hour drive. But going to Traverse City is a real treat.
Right.
Some of the best wineries that you're going to go to in the United States, not on the West Coast, are up there. Black Star Farms is a fantastic place. They make everything from white wines out of Riesling, Pinot Gris. And then you can even step into some Pinot Noir if you're into the reds, Pinot Noir, Cabernet Franc.
Okay.
I might have to do that.
That sounds like a good thing to do. I mean, are you the kind of guy as a pro, as the Windy City wine guy, you're a spit guy? And you'll take a sip because I'm not. I realized quickly, I'm like, what am I doing here? I don't even know what I'm doing. The woman's like, are you going to spit out? I'm like, no, don't touch my wine. I'm going to finish this.
So I've gone to local distributor tastings where they'll have probably about 80 plus wines there. So if you want to walk out of there, you have to do some spitting. What I usually do is I pick out the first wines that I really want to hit. So maybe about 8 of them. And then I'll spit with those. And then, you know, on the way out, then I'll have a little bit of drinky-drinky and Uber home.
Yeah, there you go. Right. Yeah, of course. Well. No one's driving. Right. We Ubered up to the hills to do that. And then we're like, oh, wow. I was surprised. This was right outside of Monterey. I was surprised there wasn't more of an infrastructure because we got in the Uber and I'm like, oh, this is great. We'll just Uber up to take 20 minutes to get up there. And the guy's like, I've never been up here before.
Wow.
And we're like, well, how do you get back? He's like, no one ever comes up here. Like, no Uber does. I think you can hit a trolley. And I'm like, what is this? This is terrible. I don't want this. I'm a city guy. I'm a Chicago guy. I don't have time for this. All right, let's talk about, wine production, obviously. There's so much that goes into wine culture. I mean, the words involved. I that was something that I had a hard time with there. I was like, I don't understand what acidity is. I don't understand what, body means. So let's talk about that. So when they say it's a full body, what is full? I mean, I get the idea that it's rich, right?
Right. Or,
yeah.
So yeah, a body is such a big term in wine, but it's just really basic. You take some of the wine in your mouth and it's the difference between what water would feel like in your mouth versus what milk or cream would feel like in your mouth. It's just a weight factor. So your lighter style of white wines like Sauvignon Blanc, or even your lighter style of red wines, Pinot Noir, are going to feel a little bit more racy, a little bit more watery. And then when you move across the spectrum over to Cabernet Sauvignon or Chardonnay, you're going to feel much more of a weight in your mouth, almost like you had cream in
your mouth. So those are the Chardonnay and Sauvignon. Those are a little bit more creamy. Those are
right,
full
body. Right,
so
that's body. Where you get really good body out of. Now, these are just generalizations with the grape varietals. I mean, I've tasted lighter-bodied Chardonnays. I've tasted maybe medium Cabernet Sauvignon or maybe even fuller Pinots. But just on a general speaking, that's where it's at.
Okay, and then is the word tannins? Is that the word?
Yeah, so grape tannins.
Tannins, okay.
You're getting this from mostly from the grape. What ends up happening is that you leave that white, clear juice that was popped out. You leave it sit with the grape skin. The grape skin starts to leach all of that grape skin material into the wine, depending on how long you leave it in there for. Sometimes, 20 days plus. You get a lot of grape skin matter out of there. And it's all of those microscopic particles that are floating around. When you take it in your mouth, it kind of latches right onto your gums. And you feel that really big grip, like your gums are being dried out. That's how you can really feel like the tannic content of a red wine. Now, you also have oak tannins as well. So depending on how long a wine spent in an oak barrel, that's going to be in there too. And that's where you can actually taste it in a barrel fermented, barrel aged Chardonnay.
Well, I mean, I'm going to have to be back because barrel versus the other ways that wines are produced. I mean, now wines are on tap. Which is something I didn't know happened. Michael Botelliero is in studio with us. He is the Windy City Wine Guy. All right, so if I'm going to, this is what you do. If I'm going to, like, you're going to consult on a wine party. That's sort of what this business is.
That's my stick, right?
Yeah, so what is a wine party? What does that mean?
So you can do, it's different depending on if it's a private or a corporate one, but the basics is you're going to have wine there, a few different kinds.
It's like a tasting?
Yeah, so a tasting. So like, let's say a client of mine wants 4 different wines, and we taste through maybe a sparkling, a white, and 2 reds. It's coursed out, so everybody will taste the sparkling wine. We'll talk a little bit about that wine, and then just keep moving along that way. Food pairings, always a fun thing to add, or cheese pairings too. One or two cheeses with each of them, some food, and then just keep moving along. That's a really fun time to have with your friends.
All right, last question I have for you tonight. I've got a dinner party next weekend, and I want to find a bottle of wine that's on the way. So it's, you know, I don't want to get crazy. That's probably a grocery store variety. That's going to look expensive, but not be expensive for when I bring it. So I'm like, oh, look at this label. I mean, that's essentially how I pick wine, okay. How fancy the label looks. That's nice, my style of picking wine. For you, I mean, a $10 to $15 variety. What's a good bottle of wine? What's a good recommendation?
In that price range, I find a lot of stuff that you can get from Australia. Shield Estate, for example. They make a Grenache Mourvèdre Shiraz blend that you can get for around $14. The label looks great.
Am I going too cheap? Am I too cheap at $10 to $15?
Oh, no. To tell you the truth, a majority of the wines I drink at my house in that $15 or less range.
Right.
Every once in a while, I'll drag something out, you know, a special occasion.
Like for graduation, you go up to 18.
Yeah. Hey, sometimes I'll say it's Friday, I'll drag something good out. But for the most part, like I said, $15 or less is a really good price range.
Right, that's the right price range. For me, I feel like I'm being sophisticated enough, and I'm also not breaking the bank.
90% of all wines consumed are $15 or less.
There we go, see? We're pulling the pretentiousness out of wine.
Exactly.
Let's just take it out. The Windy City Wine Guy. WindyCityWineGuy.com. Michael Botelliero is in studio with us. Thanks for coming in. You got to come back. We got to do this again. Take some calls, do something, talk wine.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so happy to talk about it.
People like to hear me riff about some more wine, right?
Michael, thanks for being here. How about that? I feel like I'm on the right. If anything, that segment, I feel like I'm on the right path. Do you feel like you're not much of a wine drinker?
No, but I do.
You have to get a wine, bottle of wine. Sometime.
Yeah, yeah. I'm fine with drinking a rosé every now and again.
Like, I just feel good that my instinct of going 15 and under, and almost like sticking to that.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I'm at the store and it's like, well, 20 would be good. I'm like, that just seems egregious. It should be 15 and under. And I was always in my head being like, I must be the cheapest guy in the world. And then to hear Michael say that now 90% of wines are 15 and under, I'm like, yes, vindicated.
And how about like when you're at a restaurant?
Oh, that's the worst.
And that you don't want to buy, you know, there's only a few, there's limited options perhaps for glasses. And then you don't want to buy the cheapest one because you don't want to look. So you look at like the second. Homer Simpson, the second cheapest.
I was at a restaurant not too long ago and I had that situation where, and I don't know why I leave this stuff to chance. You know, but it was like one of those where there were two or three and I was just being cool. There was like four or five people. And I'm like, you know what? We'll take a bottle of Pinot, you know, give me the good one or not give me the good. You choose. And in my head, I'm like, I want to see if I come back with like the most expensive one. If the waiter is like, well, I'm going to take this. Yeah, take for a ride. And it was second most expensive.
Hmm.
So I was like, I think there were four bottles. So I was like, Me, if I were the waiter, I'd go for the second least expensive, right? That's a tough one.
Yeah, that is a tough one.
Rob?
I'm just worried about the two of you.
Just here sitting here talking about wine.
No, the wine conversation is great. I'm a 15 and under guy myself.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Good. See, I feel like that's the secret of our society right now. No one will admit they're 15 and under wine guys.
And I do it by the look of the label as well.
Exactly.
If it catches my eye, then I'll act like I know something and actually read the description on the back. Oaky, that's good. Yeah, that's,
and I'm going to have Michael back because the one thing I noticed, because the reason I kept talking about California is my brother lives in Modesto, California, which is out about an hour and a half from San Francisco. Right, and that's where we went out there, and it's kind of wine country as you wind through there, so that's why there was a wine tour the whole bit. But in Modesto, the town is pretty much owned by Gallo Wines. From Gallo Wines?
Yeah.
Right. And what we know is Gallo Wines. I'm like, oh, yeah, Gallo, Ernesto Gallo. Yeah, or, you see that? Right.
In the box, baby.
Right, the box or the jug. But what I didn't know is that most of the wines that are those flashy labels that Mr. Martyr grabs because he likes, they also are made by Gallo. Like, Gallo just makes a ton of the wines that are making it into the grocery stores. You know what I mean? Like they're not. You think they're from everywhere, and there's so many different wine companies in the world. Oh, look at this vast array of diverse wine companies in this aisle. No, they're all made by four companies. They're just made to look different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like a lot of things in our culture. We don't think that's the way it is, but it is. And I didn't recognize that. I always thought, I'm like, oh, this one's made in California.
Yeah, right.
No.
Same.
Yeah, they're all the same company. It's like a Simpsons where it's all coming from the same vat. It's just a different label.